Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen. Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like my boy Svechnikov, disliked by the Jets organization. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend and the Wilson to my Tom Hanks abandoned Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, Vaughn?
Pretty good, but I'm feeling a little concerned, Mike, not only with the precarious playoff situation the Jets find themselves in, but also with my new Winnipeg Jets Heritage license plate that I've recently put on my vehicle.
Oh.
I don't know if you know this, Mike. I don't know if you know this, as I know you have these plates on your vehicle as well. And the plates include the tagline of honoring the past. And I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news recently, but the past isn't exactly showing very well these days. Just what type of past are we honoring here? I need more data. I just want to know I'm not going to show up for some Jets game only to find that it's Confederate flag night or Bobby Hull appreciation night. Yeah. I'm not so down with honoring that part of the past.
There's the past stock is not faring well right now.
No, it's not doing well with the focus groups. Certain focus groups like the past. They drive trucks.
Oh, so now you think you're better than me.
Hey, I drive a truck.
But you have a lovely dog.
We have a new addition to the family. Well, welcome, Cedar. So we have it's been a tick since our last one. The Jets actually played 9 games. There was an All-Star break involved. There obviously, like much of the Jets season or this regular season, there were lots of ups and many, many downs. And so we'll set the stage. I think we'll do a bit of a check-in time, and then we'll do pre-boarding announcements, and then we've got a new quote unquote bit that we're going to try out at the end, and maybe some trivia. How does that sound?
Let's go.
All right, check-in time.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
Well, Mike, the Jets have really taken us on a journey this month, as you were mentioning. It's a lot of winding roads, ups and downs. They went over the 9 games that they've played since we last had a podcast.
Yep.
They've gone 4-4-1 over the stretch, and they've had some impressive wins. They beat Minnesota twice, Nashville in Nashville, and Seattle. I think Seattle's a hardworking team, but that's also accompanied some depressing losses to Philadelphia and Chicago. If I could describe the stretch of games with 2 words, it would be representative sample.
Well done. Good mathematics lingo. Someone paid attention to their stats class.
Was there anything that stood out for you? I mean, I tried to capture it there. Just super impressed a couple nights, super disappointed another couple nights. They're all over the map. What were some of the highlights for you, Mike?
Yeah, we had a stretch coming out of the All-Star break that I thought the tone and tenor of our game changed to a certain extent. And I guess in hindsight now, it was somewhat circumstantial just in the opponents. But we had a little fight to us, and we seemed to be taking the play and some of the aggressive components of the game to our whoever we were playing, and then we seemed to bookend these good stretches with really bad losses to, quite honestly, not very good teams. The Blackhawks and the Flyers being 2 prime examples. And again, it's, I hate to use the term, but we're a bit schizophrenic in that we can really look like one of the better teams in the league for, you know, not short periods of time, and then suddenly collapse and look like we couldn't beat an AHL team. And I've been continually underwhelmed by our defense's ability. I had thought when we acquired Nate Schmidt and with Morrissey and Pionk, all sort of traditional quote-unquote offensive defensemen with presumably the ability to maneuver in tight spaces and transition to play up ice, we've just failed to do that, and we tend to get stuck and hemmed for long stretches of ice time in our own end, and our neutral game is sloppy, and it just kills us night after night, even if we're getting exceptional goaltending or exceptional performances like the we had the one really good Wheeler game, the one really good Mark Scheifele game. They're just in totality, it's not enough. And you said it perfectly. It's emblematic of the season at large.
Yeah. For me, it's been the long stretches of mundane and lackluster play where we're not generating a lot of offense, interspersed with some periods where the Jets do look good. You know, the case in point was the game on Monday afternoon in Calgary, which I thought was, you know, in a way, it's like you love and hate that game all at the same time. They're doing well in limiting what is a very hot team. They're not giving up much. But
with
not,
kind of a B squad, right? Like
with kind of a B squad, right. But they're generating even less. Now, we can chalk a lot up to injuries, guys out of the lineup for whatever reason. But there is no, it goes back to what was said before. This team doesn't have an identity that shows up night to night to night. That they're for stretches this group and for stretches a different group. You know, so I think, you know, the social media world, the Twitter world around the Winnipeg Jets really was down after the Calgary game, and perhaps it was the way in which we lost. But it was a lot of downtrodden fans. And, you know, you could say that the Jets' playoff chances after that loss were about as good as Louis Riel getting acquitted for murdering Thomas Scott. Now, it's a Louis Riel day.
Historical reference
slam.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I've had a lot of time since our last podcast.
How long have you been holding on to that one?
Well, I've got a little something for every game, like the game against the Oilers. I said, you know, the Jets lose 4-2 at home to the Oilers. Mike didn't show up for this game, and neither did the Jets for the first two periods. So, you know, I have a little something in there in my notes that, you know, I tried to keep it fun because it's supposed to be fun. But it's been hard. Like, there were some good nights, like, holy mackerel, the games against Minnesota were rewarding.
Yeah, can we play them every game?
Yeah.
Because we seem to light up, so to speak,
we've turned it around. Remember, that team kicked our ass.
For a long time.
Yeah. And then, you know, we had a really good game in Nashville. I mean...
Yeah, that was a solid game. I always enjoy beating the Preds.
Yeah.
Historically, anyway, for Jets 2.0, a bit of a nemesis. So even if it's a bit more of a muted version of their heyday 2-3 years ago, it's still very nice to beat them soundly.
And the real story that we haven't got to, the real story,
more Louis
is
Real?
The return of Team Canada Mark Scheifele. Goals in 5 straight games, okay. A hat trick.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I'm strutting around the stuff wearing nothing but my Scheifele Jets jersey.
I'm glad we don't do these podcasts in person.
Yeah, this is not a YouTube type show. No.
We're better heard, not seen.
Exactly. Especially my mother always said I had the perfect face for radio. So,
well, I thank you for that, Vaughn. I think maybe we'll jump right into our pre-boarding announcements. And we'll start with our first class assignments. Vaughn, I'll cede the floor.
Okay.
Again, large chunk of games here. But who do you think over the past 9 games deserves an upgrade to first class?
Well, as always, our first class assignment is brought to you, the listener, by First Mining Gold, providing first class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. Of course, I'm going to say Mark Scheifele. I mean... I'm going out on a limb there.
Yeah. I texted Vaughn a few days ago and I was like, let me guess who you're promoting to first class.
I honestly think you texted me that before he scored the hat trick. I think it was in between. He had scored in three straight games.
You're right.
It was right after the Chicago game where he had scored. That was his third game in a row in which he scored. And you're like, oh, and then he got a hat trick. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna grind this one into a little bit in the podcast. No, he's been much better, but he has been much better. Absolutely.
Agreed.
But I will say this, and I want to give an honorable mention to Blake Wheeler. This is the best hockey he's played.
Oh, interesting.
in the last 2 years. In the last 2 weeks, he's played better than in the last 2 years. He's skating better. He doesn't look like he has arthritis in all his joints. He doesn't just randomly fall over when the puck comes to him. He doesn't crash into the boards unnecessarily.
As much.
I mean, it's still there, but hey. I think those two are doing much better. I still think we really need
to split them up.
A Nick Ehlers back in the lineup.
Fair.
We really need to get Kyle Connor and you know, I saw something very interesting today at how much Connor and Dubois have cooled off after the coaching change.
Oh,
anyways, yeah. Another thing for another time.
Yeah.
But keeping it simple here, no two ways about it. Mark Scheifele, grab your goats, come up to first class.
Are we serving goats?
I was going to do something that was... No, we're not serving goats.
It's inappropriate, I take it.
It would be awkward. Yeah. It would be awkward. Yeah. So for me... Mark Scheifele into first class. How about you? Oh, before you go, I want to let you know.
Okay.
I have a new sponsor for the penalty box. We'll get into that later. But go. Who are you pulling up into first class?
So I'm gonna let you have Mark Scheifele because I've done plenty of soul searching and reflecting on this podcast, and you
hate
and
speech.
I have inflammatory speech. Yeah. So I'm gonna step aside and let you have that on the Blake Wheeler really quick. You're right. He is playing better. The only devil's advocate point I would make is that the bar was pretty low.
Yeah.
So I had the exact same thought. I'm like, Wheeler is playing much better than he has, and you said it, in at least 2 years. That still, on the defensive end and from shift to shift, there are some still really weak and ineffectual hockey just on a period-by-period basis. But I like this version of him much better. I'm putting in... Because he's oft maligned, Josh Morrissey.
Good.
Some of his, you know, the underlying statistics with DeMello are sometimes hit and miss. But he is, and I've noticed it over the past 2 weeks to a month, his skating ability and shiftiness and ability to dictate play has been really good, I think. I think he's been our best defenseman, and I think sometimes Morrissey has a tendency to float in and out of the play. I think he's been really well engaged, and so wanted to recognize him in first class.
Awesome. I think a lot of what we're seeing, he just has a new level of confidence. So he's not doing that
Thanks,
type of, you know, how I like how he goes behind the net,
yeah,
and he's kind of backwards skating up the ice, and
yeah,
and you know,
he worked on his edges or something because
he's edges. I love it.
Perpendicular for himself. We teach that in the old 7-year-old hockey. You got to be good on your edges. And I literally used Morrissey as an example in the practice the other day. I was like, watch him skate because that guy has control of his edges.
Absolutely. And I just think he's that return to that style of play is a byproduct of him having a lot more individual confidence, personal confidence.
Yeah,
it's a really good return to form.
I like it. Okay. So the penalty box, you want to bring in a new sponsor, unannounced? And
the bail bondsmen weren't paying their bills, so I kicked them out. Okay, so now I reached out to Charlie's Coffin Confectionery. You kill them, we fill them. Putting bodies into pine boxes since 1945. That's our new sponsor for the penalty box.
I like how your sponsors all have an alliterative effect. Well done.
Well, I help them. I help them with their comms, you know.
So the penalty box, I'll go first.
You go first.
He doesn't get mentioned too often on this forum. Neil Pionk has been disappointing to me, not only this year, but especially in the past month. He still can, he's still wily. He still gets involved in the power play and has, to my mind, gotten better when the infrequent times he's put on the penalty kill, because that was a real sore spot for a while. But defensively, his metrics are down, and he makes 2, 3, 4 really bad defensive plays and decisions a game that have proven costly. I had a second runner up in Nate Schmidt because he's guilty of basically the same offenses. But I'm just disappointed. I like Neil Pionk as a player, and was sort of a revolution in the Trouba trade, and this year has been a bit disappointing.
I agree. Everything that we've gained with Morrissey, we've lost with Pionk. Yeah. Pionk had a strong year last year, and hopefully it will come together in future years, because I do think they will be two pillars of the Jets decor going forward for a long time. I don't think Pionk has removed himself from that consideration to that extent. You know, whether what we do, and I think we're going to get into it a little bit, what we do at the trade deadline with those two acquisitions, which I both like as acquisitions at the time, and give Shovel Day off full credit for acquiring them, but they haven't worked out the way I don't think anyone would have liked. So I hear you, and I'm a Schmidt supporter and liker, but I can't disagree with anything you've said about Pionk or Schmidt. So disappointed as much for those guys as at them, you know, kind of thing. For me, who do I want to put in the penalty box? Well, I'm putting Dave Lowry and Charlie Heidel in the penalty box.
Oh, I like when we do coaches.
Lowry really said you can have too much skill in the lineup. Like, what does that even mean?
Can Adam you Brooks, imagine? You're up.
Oh my God, was he terrible?
He was awful.
Awful. I'm sure he's a nice human being.
I'm sure he's great, and I'm glad he's from Winnipeg. Great story. Yeah. Terrible hockey player.
Well, what are we doing here? Are we selling newspapers, or are we trying to win some games? Like, I don't know. Like, this Villahanla, how much better did he have to play at the end? Like, yes.
It's unbelievable to me that Logan Stanley unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. That guy is, it's just, I don't know. What does he do? He's big. He doesn't play big. He doesn't.
No.
He doesn't hit that many people. I can't say he never hits anyone. He doesn't play a particularly physical game. You know, he has this big shot that doesn't hit the net. He's an anchor. He's a 6'7" anchor.
Kevin Sawyer. It was the last game, and Logan Stanley did a typical Logan Stanley. And I've said this in earlier podcasts. He's got to lead the league in unforced icings. But he just turned around, didn't survey the play, and whipped a 30-foot golf shot over everybody as a turnover. And Kevin Sawyer had the audacity to say, see, and that's good defense. He recognized there was no play, so he just got rid of the puck. And I was like, am I in the Twilight Zone? What is happening here? And I see it on Twitter, too. There's lots of defenders, and I don't see it. Hinola's play, I thought, okay, even if you're not an advanced stat believer, there was enough of a sample size there to recognize that he is by far the better option.
Well, you know, we touched upon this in kind of our back and forth over the last few days about, and this was actually alluded to in a couple tweets, you know, about there being this fundamental disconnect between the drafting and the operations.
Yeah, exactly.
The coaching staff really wants to play this big, heavy team. And we're not drafting players like that. If you look at our bottom six, with the exception of Adam Lowry, they're not big. They're not big. Like, you can say, okay, that Podansky and Reichel, I like the way they play, but they're not big. They're not striking fear into anyone.
No.
And you have plenty of talented players that we've either ruined or run out of the lineup and not given their chance. And this is, Anal is just the next. Listen, I'll try to get into it a little bit more. I started this, you know, article on a Friday night, so it may require a little bit more clarity, if you know what I'm saying.
It just says IPA eye test 17 times over. All work and no play make Jack a dull boy.
Jen, bring me another beer. Exactly. So, Dave Lowry and Charlie Huddy, you're applying a style of hockey. Like, this is just Maurice Light. It's like, for all, I think we fixed the penalty kill and everything else has gotten worse. So, Dave Lowry, Charlie Huddy, you know, get your, you know, Cro-Mag, whatever, your stones, and get back to the back of the plane. Where, anyways, I'm mixing metaphors, and I'm at a loss for words. I mean, I
couldn't agree with you more.
You know, as someone that works with young, I just don't know what they're seeing. Or, you know, I could understand they aspire to a certain style of play, but I don't know how you look at some of the people they have in the lineup and say, yes, that's what we want. Let's keep them in there.
Just the sheer fact of Adam Brooks' first game, he immediately gets slotted in a second line role. It's unfathomable to me. And clearly they must have seen him skate or play hockey. So I don't know where this unfounded confidence came from. The whole thing is puzzling to me. Anyway, so let's we're gonna have a new segment. We're gonna try it out. 5-on-5.
Very nice. High five.
And we're gonna cover 5 topics in hopefully
quickly.
5 minutes each.
Yeah.
And we each bandied back a few ideas. I'll let you start with yours, and then we'll end on a something we've been trying to work in, the infamous Mac to Whack continuum. But we can explain what that is. But do you want to start us off? I'm going to start a stopwatch on us.
My initial idea was, should the Jets be sellers or buyers at the trade deadline? And if it's sellers, should we trade Mark Scheifele?
Well, I know your answer to the second one.
Oh, it hurt me just to say it. I was surprised. I got a little thing in my throat right now.
I was shocked.
I'm on vacation, so I'm drinking beer right now, so I'm going to have a sip of beer.
Oh. Compelling podcasting. So I'll start us off. I think for this year we should be sellers. We don't have sort of hot commodity assets. I think they're going to fetch us anywhere close to a first round pick. But I think Dylan and Kopp to me are the two that, you know, see if we can get back the 2 second rounders we paid for Dylan. I don't think that's going to happen. And Kopp, I think we've talked about this, but I think his 1 year contract for both him and the organization was a mutual understanding that, hey, this team could be really good. Why don't I stay on for an extra year and see how we do? I think just mathematically, we're pretty much eliminated unless we get really lucky and really good really fast. And so my thing would be, let's you know, try and recoup some assets. Let's play some young guys. And with respect to Mark Scheifele, you see trade rumors out there, and they're preposterous what people think. Just the chicken feed that they're throwing out there for Scheifele, yeah. Which is, I find it insulting, so I can't imagine how you feel. It's something where my only contention is, I would say no, but my only contention is we have to ask the question, is Mark Scheifele someone who can be sort of the heart and soul of your team? Because Mark Scheifele, for all his offensive talents, personality-wise, seems like a nice guy, but a bit of a Melba toast. And, you know, I saw something on Sportsnet, and he was describing what he does, and he's like, I golf, I play hockey, and I work out. And I don't know, he seems to lack a certain, I don't know, je ne sais quoi. And if he's going to be sort of your face of your franchise, it's something to consider. I don't think that consideration should happen at this trade deadline.
Okay, well, I'll answer the second part first. We should not trade Mark Scheifele now.
Shocker.
Or ever.
Yep.
Yeah. And I agree with you, though. I think we should be sellers. I give full credit to Chevy for going, you know, pretty close to all in, making some moves. It hasn't worked out. And I do think that the extent to which we are sellers will, I think we need to read the market, as any seller should.
Right.
And if Ben Chiarot is getting a first round pick, well, then
yeah,
we can get,
saw that.
We can get a first round pick for Brendan Dillon, and we can get a first round pick theoretically, because they're of about the same level of class of player.
Yeah.
So if that's the going rate, you got to find a willing partner, and that may not be there. So I do think that if we can, you know, unload some of these players, then let's do so if the price is right. I wouldn't mind holding on to them. I don't think it's urgent that we sell, but if the price is right,
the price is wrong, bitch.
Or even reasonable. We have some depth on defensemen. Let's move some people out.
Love it. Okay. Next one. I had, should Svechnikov play more, and why does Lowry hate him?
Okay. You want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
I like Svechnikov. He has, his skating doesn't seem to be the strongest, and he doesn't have a very nice aesthetic quality to his game. He's an advanced stats guy's wet dream. But I'm respectful of that, and I think the answer is yes, simply because now we have injuries, and he's a proven commodity with Connor and Dubois. Put him up there. Listen, we haven't been lighting the world with Perfetti there, who's now out. But the answer is yes. Why do they hate him? I don't know. I think it kind of touches upon what I'm going to get into in the article, is that I think there is some type of internal war going on between the front office and the coaching staff. And, you know, if that isn't the guy that the coaching staff recommended, they're just going to ignore him or grind him into irrelevance. I mean, but that's a bridge too far for this conversation.
Yeah, no,
But yeah, I think we should be playing him more. Not 20 minutes a night, but more. Like, he should be in the lineup every night, and he should be playing a regular shift.
Boom. That was exactly my thoughts. We were joking earlier about honor the past. We are, I think, a little too romantic about, in the grand scheme of things, a fairly small sample size. Like, that Svechnikov, Dubois, and Connor hit lightning in a bottle, and they were spectacular for, you know, what was it, 20, 25 games. They've had pairings subsequent to that, and, you know, obviously hasn't been as electric. So I wouldn't base my he should play more just on the fact that he seems to be the right fit for those two. Because I think I went through it. The Perfetti numbers are basically the same. But I do think that you're right. He's a little unorthodox. But the rotation of guys in our bottom six and forwards, he's better than all those guys. And he gives a crap. And he's a little feisty. And he does have, you can see it. He's been a bit snake bitten, but he does have a bit of a scoring touch. So I agree with you. I think he should. He definitely should
super
be benched.
Fast. Yeah. Super fast to your point. Yeah. I think the coaching staff wants the bottom six to skate fast and crash. Skate fast and crash. And he isn't like that.
No, fair. That's a good point. Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I don't know what they want, but if I had to guess, that would probably be it. Okay. You're up.
Okay, so the next one I had was, what is the over-under for how much Pierre-Luc Home Depot re-signs for? Because I think he's going to re-sign. I really do. I think he's a restricted free agent, so we have him probably for an absolute minimum one, probably two more years. Mm-hmm. But I think they're going to, you know, with Stastny coming off the cap, I think they'll do what they to free up some space. He makes $5 million now.
Yep.
It won't be less than that. What is the over-under for how much his AAV will be?
Yeah, so right now he's 79th in scoring, which is good. He's, you know, in his career, he's never quite reached, not that it's the pinnacle of all stats, but it's a sort of good common benchmark. He's never really been a point per game player. I mean, up until, you know, his last couple of years in Colorado, he wasn't playing with the best wingmates. And his sort of comparables in the market. So let's presuppose for a second that he's considered sort of a quasi first line center. You know, it's debatable now in terms of who's been the better all-around center this year, him or Scheifele. You know, Scheifele makes, what, 6.2?
1.25.
Yeah. And guys like Nugent Hopkins and some of the centermen around his sort of points per game level are around $5 million. So I would put probably the over-under at 6, and I don't know about term. I'm sure, obviously, his agents would be asking for more, and big, somewhat rugged first-line centers have, you know, they're deemed more valuable than your, you know, your skilled left winger, right? So he's got that in his favor. But I would put the over-under around 6, and I would say that's where the number should or could be. But what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm just looking at Cap Friendly right here, and I've had a couple thoughts. Number one, I think that the number for the over-under is $6.125 million, and that's exactly what Mark Scheifele's AAV is.
Yeah.
So they would be looking not at – I think there is probably an internal budget, but there's also a pecking order issue to be dealt with here. I mean, your captain's AAV is 8.25, so you can justify that in the room because he's your captain. Cal Connor is an interesting – I was quite surprised he got what he got. I think it's because he offered so many years. He's at 7.142, and that's like over $1 million more than Scheifele. So, you know, I'm not saying that's enough. I mean, Scheifele's got a little bit of an undervalued contract when you look at the grand scheme of things.
And he hasn't been quiet about his disdain or distaste – for the fact that he thinks he's undervalued.
Really? I've never heard, I've never seen a quote attributed to him about that, but I don't doubt that to be the case. He's not broke. This is my problem with these idiots. Like, he never has to work again. He never has to sign another contract again. Like, so it's, so that's what I'm
cottages?
Saying.
How many cottages?
They literally, yeah. he's a six cottage guy. Like, that should be like the denomination for, like, if you make 6 mil, you can't say 6 mil. You gotta say he's a six cottage guy.
I love it. Let's coin that.
They don't understand money, right? So they understand what number, all they understand about numbers is what number is larger and which number is smaller and how that fits in the room.
They're
hockey players, right? So the organization has to look at, will we pay Pierre-Luc Dubois more money than Mark Scheifele, and whether are they prepared to deal with any potential fallout attributed to that. My other thought, super quickly, it's unrelated. Holy shit, Nate Schmidt makes $5.95 million.
I saw that.
Holy shnikes. Anyways, I don't
I got
mean
one
this,
for you super quick.
I don't
that.
Mean to get us sidetracked, but yeah. that's my two thoughts. Okay. My thoughts.
Kevin, just remember Kevin Hayes?
Yeah.
$7 million.
Oh my God.
I was in Cap Friendly. Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, that guy makes $7 million? That was a good one. I enjoyed that exercise. My next one was, and this ties into the larger conversation we've been having, but can a healthy Jets team, as currently constructed, obviously if we sell off a few pieces and bring a few new pieces, but basically the core of this team with Ehlers back, can we be a contender? Or does this probably gets to the article that you're going to be writing, but can we make a Stanley Cup push as currently constructed, tweaking here and there?
I think 100% yes. A Stanley Cup push. I think we've seen what this team isn't quite resilient enough to deal with injuries. But I think if they stay relatively healthy, they can survive the departure of Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny. I think their top six can be good enough. I mean, they still have Adam Lowry for a lot of years. I think he's a decent to quite good bottom six linchpin. I think their defense, you know, with I think if they get the pairings right. And another thing that this effing coaching staff loves to do is they put Logan Stanley out there with the first line. I don't understand what they're trying to do. It's like it's the playoffs get, you know, too much of their summer or something like that. Anyways, it's frustrating. But I think if they can work out the bottom six, there's enough talent there that if we get the pairings right and we get a Morrissey and Pionk on the same page, like playing at the same good level that we've seen them play, that there is enough there that we can make a pretty deep push if we stay healthy. What do you think?
I agree somewhat. I think that, you know, and we've mentioned this ad nauseum now, but I think if we move Wheeler down to a third line role, that helps supplement the bottom six. I think if we're consistent and if we make some smarter choices with our young players, and obviously all of this is contingent on Hellebuck maintaining at a very high level or playing at a very high level, I'm less confident than I was at the start of this year. I was obviously very confident in our ability to make a Stanley Cup push, and I'm a little worried that coaching and personnel decisions aside, that there's a certain core to this team that is just not, you know, they've shown resiliency and they've shown some toughness, but there's enough inconsistency there in the play and overall that I'm more skeptical. I don't disagree with what anything you've said, but I'm starting to, I guess the best way to put it.
That's fair. I mean, I'm an optimist because I think the world is a great place, and you're terrible because you've
burned
only...
it to the ground. Some men just want to watch the world. Okay. Well, that on that note, Mac.
What's
Whack,
our last one?
this is your time to shine, buddy.
Okay, so a long-standing thing in our group of friends is we've had this thing called the whack to Mac continuum. Okay, so whack meaning bad, Mac meaning really cool. So I looked this up, and the definition of whack means not up to the mark, which is about as Caucasian a definition as possible.
I was just going to say, way to go.
Yeah, and the definition I found for Mac was ultra pimp, which is perhaps more close to the original cultural intent of the phrase.
There you go.
Because inside out is wiggity wiggity. Something can either be whack or it can be Mac, and it's like a 0 to 10 kind of scale.
So do you want to do the jet season as a whole?
Sure. I'll do the jet season as a whole. So here's the thing about the beauty of the whack to Mac continuum. Something can be so whack that it can become Mac. And I think
that's very
true.
Thanks, Dan.
That's where we're leaning towards this season. Because, you know, if we are going to fall down the standings and get a much better draft pick, that can be a good thing. And that's where things can flip. So if our season gets to be so bad that it's, you know, it improves our draft pick situation. I think we're getting close to needing some fresh blood. We need the next Cole Perfetti, I think. This and the next draft are supposed to be pretty good. Yeah. Apparently, the one after this next one is supposed to be even better. But, I think if we weren't going to go all the way, you know, I'd rather us fail like we're failing now, okay, as opposed to maybe just squeaking in and you know, drafting 20th overall as opposed to 10th overall, because that's generally where we were drafting when we got Perfetti. You get someone falling down.
You get
so
the 20s.
I would definitely characterize this year as far like a 3 on the whack to Mac continuum, so far more whack than Mac, but it could have that get to that tipping point where, boom, after the draft, it becomes a Mac.
Well done. That was well played. I'm going to go 2 on the whack to Mac continuum, not silent about my high hopes for this season. And I'm as it seems to be a theme here today, I'm a little skeptical that, rightfully so. And you've said it, like, I don't want to watch games where we're tanking, but to me, the only way to convert this to anywhere on the positive Mac continuum is to just start tanking and see if we can get in the top 5-7. Because I think I haven't studied it super close yet, but that's, you're sort of not guaranteed, but a really good chance that you can get a quality player. You get into the 10, 11, 12, bit more variability there. And
true.
So, I'll put it at a 2. I know a 2 and a 3 are kind of bummers, but I do love the whack to Mac continuum.
I do. I hope it's a regular feature on upcoming podcasts. I know our fans are dying for more content and better, more urban-friendly content. But back, just quickly, back to your point about, you know, how close or how far we may be from winning. So we've carried this torch for some time, and I'm going to give, and we mentioned it might have, I think we mentioned it on the last podcast, I'm going to give the Jets podcast, or the Jets show on TSN, credit for picking this up. They ripped off our work, which I don't mind. But so just quickly an update on this. When the Jets score 2 goals or less.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, I meant to text you.
Okay. The Jets score 2 goals or less, 1 win, 18 losses, 4 overtime defeats. When the Jets score 3 or more goals, 21 wins, 2 losses, and 4 overtime defeats. That's a massive swing by just 1 goal. You know, there's that long-standing adage in sports, there's a fine line between winning and losing. Mm-hmm. And for the Jets, it's between scoring 2 or 3 goals. Now, if you look at, which my original analysis was 4 or more goals. That's what I was tracking for a long time. So this current version of the Jets, when they score 4 or more goals, they are 16-0-1. So when it's just 3 goals, they're 5-2-3. So a little bit more when they just score 3 goals, mm-hmm. right? Because there's only been those, 10 games where they've scored 3 goals. So not a bad record, but it really turns on its head when you hit 4 goals. But 21-2-4 is an outstanding record. is an outstanding record when they can score three or more goals. So again, back to two or less, one win, 18 losses, four overtime defeats. It's such a fine line between winning and losing. We got it. Just getting a few more goals could mean all the difference between where we are now and where we saw this group being prior to the start of the season. So that's why I think there's a little bit of hope.
Yeah, no, fair. And I was it a broadcast? Was it our was. Team? And I should have texted you because you slaving away in a dark room under candlelight crunching numbers. And these yahoos come up and stole your thunder. So I apologize on behalf of the podcast and behalf of the Jets broadcast team. Couldn't agree more. My only caveat to that is that, you know, if any listeners are thinking, well, if you score four goals in any game, you really have a good chance of winning because the league averages in scoring and league averages in goals against are all under four. So your chances are very much increased. And last year we did some number crunching. Again, I didn't do every team, but we're at the top end of this where it really depends on, again, because I think we're not very strong defensively. We're really reliant on, you know, strong shooting percentage and capitalizing because when we don't, we lose. And so, but yeah, I couldn't agree more, and shame on Bayak and Sawyer for stealing your analysis.
Well, we've always said we're a narrative setting podcast, and it's, you know, what do they say? Imitation is a serious form of flattery. So I look forward to a long career of, you know, giving them their material. So, Mike, I understand you got a trivia question.
I do. Some more silliness. So at the opening, I made a Tom Hanks and Wilson reference, and that was in reference to me abandoning Vaughn at a Jets game. But because he's got such a deep library of movies, I'd never ask because it doesn't come up in conversation. I'll give you a multiple choice. What is the best Tom Hanks movie? A, Castaway. B, Philadelphia. C, Forrest Gump. D, Big, or E, Saving Private Ryan, or F, I don't like Tom Hanks, and this is a silly question.
It's Saving Private Ryan. Here,
I knew it. I added the one at the end.
Do you want to know something?
I do.
I haven't seen three of those movies. Which ones do you think I haven't seen?
Oh, I don't think you've seen Castaway.
I have seen Castaway.
Oh, my goodness. You haven't seen Philadelphia, Forrest Gump, or Big? That's a travesty no matter what ones you pick there.
Yep. I have not seen Forrest Gump, I have not seen Philadelphia, and I have not seen... Well, I mean, Big's on TV, so you catch 5 minutes of it, and you think, this is ridiculous, I'm not watching this, I'm an adult. It's preposterous. What type of premise is this? Is this true crime? No. Change the channel. Is this true crime? No. Change the channel. Oh, there you are, A&E. I'll watch something about murders.
You must love Netflix. 75% of Netflix is true crime.
I love Netflix.
I watch a lot of those too. They're very good. Okay.
Well, usually for the last call, we talk about the upcoming games, but you know, who knows when we're going to be on next. I don't mean that in a bad way. So we're just going to go right to the sign off.
Okay.
We're going to try a little bit shorter format.
Sounds good.
All right. So fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Face-Off Hockey Network podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, on the interweb at thefhn.net, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast podcasts. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets go.